Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:11 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 2nd. I thought we'd kick off today with the Selective Stay at Home Index. It has rebounded incredibly impressively from the lows put in March, but perhaps more important than that is the fact that it is substantially above the peaks that were also posted in March. So this is an index that they don't give us what the constituents are, but it is the basis for a number of ETFs. Now, the question, of course, is how sustainable is this kind of move? This is an incredible acceleration, certainly compared to the index's prior history. It's composed, one has to assume, by companies that had been already well underway in terms of gaining market share. But then it's also undoubtedly got companies that were potentially on the brink of going bust before this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to gain market share presented itself. We can think about this just by looking at two separate shares. Shopify has been rallying incredibly impressively for a fairly prolonged period already. It really did start to take off, and we can probably see it best on the logarithmic scale chart in 2016. And the pace of the advance has kept up, and it has basically more than tripled since the low in March. So this is a spectacular advance. There is a clear perception that this is the one company that has got the potential to take on Amazon. It's probably going to be years before we can make a determination as to whether that is entirely overly optimistic or whether it is it is in fact realizable. But the one thing that we certainly know is that the price continues to rally, and it has moved through the $1,000 level in US dollar terms in here today. Well, it wasn't quite able to hold on to all of the advance. And we can also say that there have been consolidations along the way. And also, we know that the region of the trend mean has offered support. The issue, of course, with thinking about the trend mean in terms of the 200-day moving average today is that it is half of where the price is today. In fact, the price could pull back by nearly 60% and still then only approximate the region of the trend mean. So we've had a very clear acceleration. There's absolutely no questioning that. But it would really require a very substantial downward dynamic in order to confirm a peak of near-term significance, and then a break in the sequence of higher reaction lows, which right now is probably around the $865 area. Of course, that means that there's at least $200 of fat on the share that could be shaved off before any real damage would be done to the uptrend. But the valuation is extraordinary. It's got an estimated PE of 2,000, so there is certainly a very clear willingness to jump in and support these kinds of shares, because there doesn't seem to be anything else that is capable of delivering the kinds of returns that are on offer, and that we have got this very clear environment where there are extraordinarily low interest rates, extraordinary amounts of liquidity getting poured into the market, and the very, clear message coming through from central banks that they're not going to raise interest rates in a hurry. So that is creating conditions where the discount rate is no longer meaningful, and therefore valuing shares based upon it, it makes no sense whatsoever. It's all about, at this stage, capturing market share. That's what Shopify is doing. But then we also have other companies like Peloton. Well, Peloton sells $2,000 pieces of home exercise equipment and then has online classes, which they expect you to pay for separately. Now, the one thing that is quite clear is that the price was well below its IPO level back in March, but since then it is up about three times as well. Now, the big question that people should be asking is not so much whether people are eager to work out at home, while they have no other choice, but rather will they continue to do so when they are able to go back to the gym or able to get out and exercise with friends or outside in future. Then when we're in the middle of a recession, how willing are people going to be to continue to pay upwards of $2,000 for an exercise bike and then the additional subscription that goes along with it? These are the kinds of companies that are benefiting in the short term, but it's very much open to question whether they will continue to benefit in the medium term. Then when we look at, for example, a company like Dropbox, it's another sort of share that should do well in this kind of environment where there will be increasing demand for additional storage, and not least because of additional cloud infrastructure and assets, or I guess intellectual property assets, being created from home and in remote locations. But the more important point is that it is consolidating above its trend mean, and it has broken the downtrend that's been evident really since shortly after its IPO. Now, when we also look at other sectors that should potentially do well from the current environment, well, then the biotech index is just on the cusp of completing its breakout. It's at new all-time highs, and it was in positive territory again in here today, but it wasn't quite able to hold all of the advance, so we may see some additional consolidation. But I do think that this is one of the most promising of sectors as we look out, not just in the short term, but over into the medium term. The cybersecurity ETF has also regained its peak, and it's consolidating in the region of those peaks. And with so much additional remote working going on, it just makes logical sense that there will be an additional requirement for cybersecurity type solutions. And then, of course, we have the cloud computing sector. Well, cloud computing has been an evolving sector for over a decade already, and this is an acceleration of that trend. And the way that I've been thinking about the coronavirus and the lockdowns in terms of various trends is that it's an accelerant. So if we go back and think about all the different kinds of things that we were considering and worried about in 2019, then the coronavirus amplifies them. I've been previously thinking about them, how it makes everything worse. When you think about the quantity of debt outstanding, it makes it worse. When we think about the massive deficits that various governments are running, it makes them worse. But it's probably more correct to think about it as an amplifier, because what it is in fact doing is pulling forward sales from years in the future into the present moment for these types of companies. Some are going to capture enormous market share, particularly from the physically dependent type of companies, and they'll hold on to that, and they're likely to continue to do well. And that's likely to be the case particularly for the big cloud computing type companies. Then, of course, there will be those that are just flash and burn, and there are probably going to be significant numbers of those. But one thing that we can certainly think about is that in terms of e-commerce, anything to do with e-commerce, and that anything that has got a very clear way of accessing that e-commerce market continues to do well. Amazon is closing in on that 3,000 level. Now, it paused at 2,000 and it paused around 2,500, so it's not at all beyond the bounds possibility that it paused here at 3,000 as well. But as long as that's all we get, then this is still an uptrend. But I think it wouldn't be at all beyond the bounds possibility that we do see some consolidation in the region of big round numbers. when we then think about Mercado Libre, it's basically the same business model deployed in Latin America, and it's now closing in on the $1,000 level. So again, this is another area where we might anticipate some resistance coming through, and not least because of this very wide overbought condition. Then we've got Wayfair, and that has this is a company that I'm rather puzzled by. I've bought things on Wayfair previously and I've returned every single one of them because there was a problem with them, and the share has gone from about 25 to 200 in the space of 3 months, which is rather extraordinary. But again, the question is how much of that market share gain are they going to be able to hold on to? And there is obviously still a bull market here. It has continued to rally, but now the question is how much of this gain can it hold on to? Well, I think there are the rising tide has lifted all boats. I think that's very clear. Eventually, we're going to see the tide go out. Some of those companies are going to go bust, and others will survive. But so far, we're still in a momentum-driven market. Now, when we then zoom out a little and look at the wider economy, well, the Russell 2000 has so far not been able to push back above its trend mean. The Dow Jones Industrials is also still below its trend mean, and there is the potential here that we're going to see some additional consolidation below it. Against this, I think, uncertainty, there is the clear point here that we've seen a consolidation on the vast majority of Wall Street over the course of the last month, even as some of these highly levered companies have continued to accelerate higher. So the breath in the market hasn't been really quite as wide as one might have hoped for. Now, when we look at the advanced decline line for the S&P 500, there is a clear bounce from the region of the trend mean. As long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to recovery. It is, I think, an important index to pay attention to because it, I think, is unlikely that we're going to see a major top formation completed unless this is also breaking downwards. It's an index that is created by taking all the advancers from all the decliners on a day. When it's positive, it'll rise. When it's negative, it's going to fall. So in order for a downtrend, the majority of shares would have to be in downtrends. And that is consistent with a top in the market. So obviously, then the big question is, how much liquidity are we going to continue to see put into the market? Now, the size of the Fed's balance sheet will be updated later on today, and we are into a new month. They have said that they're going to buy $120 billion worth of bonds, 80 of treasuries, 40 of mortgage bonds for at least the next year, potentially 2 years. They're going to have to certainly follow through on that promise in order for these accelerating uptrends to continue to accelerate. But of course, the worry about just what that means in terms of the inflationary outlook, not particularly in the short term, but over the medium term, and what it means for the purchasing power of fiat currencies is being reflected in the gold price. And gold was able to reverse a short-term or an intraday decline in here today and finished in positive territory. Silver prices were also able to unwind the intraday decline. Of course, silver has been consolidating here below $19 now for a month already. There's a mild upward bias over the course of the last couple of weeks, but in order to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, silver will have to sustain a move up and out of this base formation. Then when we think about high beta gold and ways of buying gold at a discount, that's always going to be the question in a gold bull market. How do you get it at a knockdown price? Well, GDX has broken out and GDXJ has not. So far in the early stages of a bull market, investors are willing to focus on the lowest cost producers. They want security that there is going to be a profit at the end of the day, and that they want all in sustaining prices that are truly impressive so that they can get cash flows and yields. As a bull market progresses, people become less worried about dividends and they're much more attuned to leverage to the gold price. And that generally coincides with the second psychological perception stage of the bull market. So the first psychological perception stage is disbelief. People just don't believe that there is significant upside potential. Anyone who comes out with a very bullish prognostication that prices are going to multiply and multiply again will be viewed as a maverick or as an old hack, and that is generally always the case in the first psychological perception stage. When people start to gain some confidence that breakouts can hold, that there is an uptrend in evidence, and that it is worth buying and holding and not simply trading, and also then thinking about how they can possibly make the most money from this new uptrend, then they start to think about leveraged plays. Well, leveraged plays to gold are those kinds of companies that are not yet producers. So then you obviously have the leverage of the uncertainty. But then you also have the companies that have got a higher cost of production. They become much more volatile to the price because if they had previously been valued as loss makers, as they approach the potential to become profit makers, then their shares take on a premium. And we haven't seen that yet with silver. We haven't seen it with the junior gold miners. Therefore, it also helps to illustrate that we're still in the first psychological perception stage of this new gold bull market, and that we are potentially approaching the beginning of the second psychological perception stage. I think most interesting factor is that when we look at gold on a purchasing power parity basis, the price is coming back up into the region of the peaks put in 2011 from a purchasing power parity basis. But we're still really only in the foothills of a new bull market. And in fact, this entire consolidation that's been going on underway now for the better part of a decade could potentially be construed as a range in the region of the previous peak. And the previous peak is also in the region of this 250 to 275 area. So there is the clear potential that when gold does in fact move into the second psychological perception stage of the bull market, that it will be trading on a purchasing power parity basis in new all-time highs. And there is clear rationale for why that might be the case, because the parallels that we have in the wider world today are extraordinarily similar to what was evident in 1968, where you had student protests, you had a great deal of civil unrest. That panicked the political establishment into monetary financing. So the central banks simply printed the money that the governments wanted. That contributed to infrastructure development. It contributed to social housing projects. I know for a fact that my parents bought their first house on a fixed interest mortgage over 30 years. It chewed up a substantial amount of their income in the early years of the mortgage, but then galloping inflation took over. Wages increased, their mortgage was locked in at a fixed rate, and by the time that they sold the house, it had increased by 11 times, and wages had gone up even more. Well, those are the kinds of things that create wealth in an inflationary environment, when you can lock in physical assets, and that's obviously one of the reasons why people also favor gold, because it's a mobile physical asset. Now, when we then think about what's going on in the rest of the world, the reality is that the USA has been the region that has been most aggressive in its fiscal and monetary easing. Now, the dollar was steadier in here today, but to my mind, this continues to look like a distribution. And if that's the case, then the euro is likely to continue to consolidate and will eventually break above the 114 area. We can also, I think, pay attention to the fact that Europe was in positive territory today, certainly reflecting the more positive tone on Wall Street yesterday. The Japanese market was in mildly positive territory, but it is continuing to consolidate above the trend mean. With everything that is going on in Hong Kong and the imposition of the security measures, the Shanghai index was up in a very robust manner in here today. Hong Kong itself, the Hang Seng, was up approximately 2%, and there is a great deal of money flowing into Hong Kong in order to placate markets and I think to draw attention away from the fact that there are people getting rounded up left and right as now in contravention of these security laws. So there is obviously an effort underway to inflate prices to placate the wider population, even as a crackdown occurs on democracy protesters. So there is a little bit of carrot and stick going on right now. Then when we think about other emerging markets, what I find quite interesting is that the Philippine peso continues to appreciate, and that is one of the strongest currencies in the world today. And the Philippine stock market continues to recover. The Indian rupee was also in positive territory in here today and strengthening up to 75, so that's rather positive. It's also helping to support investor interest, and the stock market now has just about unwound all of its overextension relative to the trend mean. The banking sector has not yet been able to break up and out of its range, but it is right there in the region of the upper side. If it can sustain a move back above 25,000, that will be confirmatory evidence of a return to demand dominance. We are at, I think, a rather interesting time, because there has been a great deal of money that has inflated a rather narrow portion of the stock market. The dollar looks a little susceptible to additional selling pressure, but if we do get a consolidation, it will probably contribute to some dollar strength. Government bond yields have been completely inert for most of the last 3 weeks, and there is a great deal of manipulation of that market going on, and the VIX index is now back in the region of its trend mean and off its lows in here today, so we may see some additional pop on the upside. The potential here is that we are on the cusp of another pullback, but that is likely to be to foreshadow additional rounds of stimulus. As we move further into July, everybody knows that a lot of people are going to have to write tax checks in the next 2 weeks. Then we also know that the additional unemployment benefits from the CARES Act expire in the USA at the end of July, and then Congress goes on holiday for August. If additional spending measures and support measures are going to be announced, they have to happen in the next couple of weeks. And we have historically, at least over the last 2 months, seen on multiple occasions that when the market pulls back by about 5%, the Federal Reserve jumps into action. We may potentially now be on the cusp of another one of those moves. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.